man is going to an important job interview, really wants this job, and he arrives to his 1 o'clock interview at around 1:15, and he goes in and they ask questions and he answers the questions, and with each answer to each question, it becomes increasingly obvious to him that these are terrible answers to these questions and that this is not going well. He can tell that it doesn't even seem as though they're listening to the answers. At the end of it, he's convinced that that was about the worst job interview he could ever have had. He goes home and on his way stops to call his wife and he says to her, "I got the job." Some of y'all may have seen one of the basketball games last night, I think Kansas-Villanova. I think the halftime score of Villanova was up by 15. And what I want you to imagine is as they interview Bill Self, the Kansas coach, going off the floor, I want you to imagine, you know, they always do those interviews and the coaches try very hard not to say anything. But imagine that in that moment, Bill Self, they said, "Coach, how's it going? You're down 15. What are you going to do in the second half?" And he says, "Second half? I'm already game planning for Monday. We've won." And if you could happen to catch a glimpse of the Kansas players in the locker room, if they were all hugging each other and jumping up and down as though they had won, that would seem odd, being down 15 at halftime. It's the month or so before a political election, and you've got one candidate who is polling and polling worse and worse each week. The polls come out and her lead, how far she is behind, it just increases and increases. And it's looking increasingly like it's just going to be a landslide against her. And so one day she calls a press conference. And they ask, you know, "Is this to tell us that you're not even going to bother to stand in this election? Or are you saying that you know this isn't going to be your election to win?" And she said, "I've come today to declare victory. I know how this is going to go." In each of these instances, you have things that whether it's the job interviewer or the coach or the political candidate, you have instances where things look as though they are not good. The situation is not good, but you have people who are acting otherwise, who are acting totally out of sync with the circumstances that are in front of them. We have been reading, the congregation has been reading the Gospel of John. And as we've made our way through the Gospel of John, one of the things that I enjoy, and I hope that as you read Scripture is something that happens for you. But even if you've read something, and maybe you've read it a number of times, you suddenly see a verse or a word or a story or a character that you didn't notice or pay attention to before, or just a line that you've read over and you've read over and it's just been a part of it. And then on this one particular occasion, for some reason, it's different. There's something about it. And that happened for me this time, and in different places, and I loved reading the whole thing, but the verse that I don't know why it didn't seem larger to me in the past, was John 16:33. And really the second half of John 16:33, where I want to set the scene of what is going on here. This is Jesus with his friends, Jesus with his 12 disciples, and they're gathered for what will be his last supper with them. So probably celebrating the Passover meal, which Jesus is sort of reinterpreting to them into the communion service that we now have. But Jesus is having this meal with his friends, and it has to be for him somewhat melancholy experience. Maybe not so much for them, because they don't have the sense of what's going on. And I don't think Jesus had a blow-by-blow of what was going to happen. But I think that Jesus, in his mind, in his heart, knows this is his last meal with his friends. And so here is Jesus, and he's speaking to them in this moment before these things happen, before he's going to go to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray, to sweat blood and pray. And then he's going to be arrested. And then they're going to take him and put him on trial and beat him. Then they're going to take him to another location where they will try him again and beat him. Then they will mock him and force him to carry a cross to the place of crucifixion, and there he will be crucified. This is what is in front of Jesus when John 16:33, when the words here are being spoken. All of that is yet to happen. And Jesus says to his friends, "Be encouraged. I have conquered the world. I have conquered the world." I read that and I thought, has this always been here? Like, what a time to say that, knowing in some sense of what will come after, to say at that moment, "I have conquered the world." So we're going to move to Easter morning now, and to the scripture that begins with, I think, probably my favorite opening line in all of scripture and of any literature, really. "Early in the morning, on the first day of the week, while it was still dark." It just draws you in. Early in the morning, on the first day of the week, while it was still dark. In that place, at that time, Mary Magdalene comes to the tomb. She finds that the stone has been moved. Mary Magdalene is not a bunch of Christians going to church on Easter morning. Mary Magdalene is somebody who's going to a grave to care for the body of someone she cared about. And she gets there, and things are not as she expects to find them early in the morning on the first day of the week. And so she's shaken up by this. So she goes and she tells the disciples, and Peter and John run to the tomb. They run to see what has happened, and they discover what we found out about the box. They found out that the tomb was empty. Still not sure that they know what to make of it at this point, but we know that later Mary is back, and that's the second part of the scripture I read this morning. Mary's back at the tomb, and in that place she's in the garden, and she's weeping. So there she is, not knowing what's happened. The disciples have come and looked, and they really can't answer the question for her. And so she's come to the last place where she knows that Jesus was. And she's there weeping for whatever it is that has happened. And in that moment, a person comes up to her who she believes to be the gardener. It's a garden. Person's the person taking care of the garden. So she comes to the gardener. And the gardener approaches her, and the gardener looks her in the eye and says to her, "Mary." And in the moment when the gardener speaks her name, she knows that she was mistaken about it being the gardener. She hears her name and she knows that this is Christ. This is Jesus standing before her. Jesus conquered the world. Jesus conquered death. It was not plainly visible when he said it. So in that moment, chapters earlier, before any of these things happened, when he said, "I've conquered the world," it may have seemed kind of hollow given what came after. But wait for it. Because there comes this point where Jesus speaks her name, Mary, and it turns out he's right. Jesus conquered the world. Not visible when he said it, but the truth when he said it. That simply is the good news of Easter this morning. It is that all evidence to the contrary throughout all of history, up to and including whatever's going on the news right now, anything that you could marshal as evidence to the contrary, the reality is that Jesus has conquered the world. Jesus has conquered death. This past Wednesday, a car accident claimed the life of a friend of mine. A friend who I met at the last Presbyterian Youth Triennium. He and his wife worked with me in the dorm, and we kind of made sure that all the students in the dorm got where they needed to be and were in at night, that sort of thing. But we spent a week, mostly all day, together doing these things. And Diana Monahan and Buddy Monahan were there with me. And Buddy, who I just met both of them that week, but Buddy turns out to be 2 years younger than me. I would have guessed about my age, 2 years younger. Buddy was a person of, in a week you can learn this easily from his interaction with the students and from just talking with him. Buddy was a Presbyterian pastor, a person of immense integrity, a very funny person, and yet a person who, his background is Native American, and so he's very passionate about Native American issues, and is active on the national, was active on the national level in our church with Native American relationships within the church. And so that was a big part of who he was. But he was also this guy, if he was standing here, you would, and you said, we're going to send one of these two people to go fight for your lives, who do you want to send? You would like say, Buddy, Buddy. Because Buddy was this huge guy, and he loved to have this look about him that was, he'd wear these sunglasses so you couldn't see his eyes, and which is really ideal if you're trying to keep a dorm full of high school students sort of in line. But he was a little bit stocky, but muscular. You could tell that it was not, there was no fat there. He's sturdy, and these glasses, and he'd have this look on his face that just was like, I'm never gonna smile in my life. I mean, if you were trying to find somebody, if you needed a bouncer, that you wouldn't need to have interviews, you'd go get Buddy. But then, once he knew he had you, then he would smile. And that smile would light up the place, wherever he was, and you knew that you were in on the joke with him, and that he was having fun with you, and how caring and how compassionate he was. And so, reading that news on Wednesday, then thinking about Diana, and thinking about children, thinking about the congregation that's doing the things we've done the rest of this week in the absence of their pastor, and you wonder, how do you go through something like that? How do you find your way through these kinds of things? Several weeks back, I talked about Mike Iaconelli. I want to share a quote by his son, Mark Iaconelli. He said, "We do not become hopeful by talking about hope. We become hopeful by entering darkness and waiting for the light. We do not become hopeful by talking about hope. We become hopeful by entering darkness and waiting for the light." Jesus was facing his most painful and difficult moments. It is precisely in that moment that he says, "I have conquered the world." Doesn't wait till he emerges from the tomb to say it. He says it in his most difficult and painful moment. And I think that speaks to us. So that whatever it is that any person in this room might be carrying with them, Jesus is speaking to us those words, "I have conquered the world." Here's a thing that we often overlook about the garden tomb and about the crucifixion. I think we picture those things as there's a place where Jesus is crucified, and then we picture a tomb where there's a garden, a peaceful place. But if you'll pay attention to the multiple gospel stories about this, what it says is that the tomb is very nearby to the place of crucifixion, because they didn't want to go far because it was getting towards sundown and they were wanting to bury Jesus because the Sabbath was going to come. And so it indicates that the tomb was close by. Now, we don't know if it's precisely the location, but it helps to visualize how close that might have been to say that if you're in the traditional site, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, and you walk in the door of it, up here, just up some stairs, is the place of crucifixion. You come down those stairs and walk maybe, I don't know, 200 yards, probably less than that, and there's the place where you honor the tomb of Christ. What I'm saying is that one is in the shadow of the other. And so when Mary goes to the tomb, she's also basically going back to the side of the crucifixion. And as you think through Mary's tears there in the garden, she isn't just probably crying because she's standing before a tomb that has a stone rolled aside. She's crying because she's in the shadows of the place of probably the deepest pain that she can imagine or remember. We can think we are in the place of crucifixion and be at the place of the resurrection all at the same time. That's a truth. Early in the morning, while it was still dark, while it still feels like a crushing loss is pressing in, when it's so bad that we are next to an empty tomb, and through our tears, the only thing we can see is a cross. Early in the morning, when it's so bad that when Jesus is standing there next to us, we imagine that it's a gardener. Let the gardener draw near to you. Don't be concerned that the gardener is not somebody that you don't know, but just let that gardener come up, because it is likely that the gardener may whisper, Mary. The gardener may whisper your name. And the gardener may whisper in your ear, I love you. I have conquered the world. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed. Thanks be to God.